America's Cannabis Conversation. Heard every Saturday at 4:20 p.m. online at americascannabisconversation.com. We're part of the W420 Radio Network, and each week we provide you with information, education, and insight into the exploding medical and recreational cannabis industry. You'll hear from industry leaders, elected officials, local experts, detractors, and more. Learn how to build your own cannabis business, how to grow the product, what's legal, and where it's legal. Tune in each week to hear updates from the National Cannabis Industry Association in Washington, tips on investing in cannabis markets, personal success stories, and more. It's now time to join America's Cannabis Conversation. Time now for another intriguing tale on the ever-fascinating cannabis trail with W420 Radio Network's lifestyle correspondent, Rich Wolkoff.
Hey, we're here at the Harvest Ball. That's the Weed Festival in Santa Rosa, California, an hour north of San Francisco, about 2 hours south of the proverbial Emerald Triangle, the birthplace, the epicenter of the greatest weed in the world. And we're talking today with Randy Lanier from freedomgrow.org, a former Indy 500 Rookie of the Year race car driver, international race car champion, who unfortunately was incarcerated for 27 years for smuggling and attempting, allegedly, or convicted for distributing marijuana. Randy, you spent almost maybe half your life behind bars, and now you're trying to help people who are also incarcerated for cannabis convictions.
Thank you. It's Randy Lanier, and so I thank you for giving me this opportunity to, just to share the awareness that there's too many families that are going through hardships and struggles due to the stigma of this plant, and people are still incarcerated, and it's sad that it's still going on when there's 36 states that is in some form of legal, whether it's medical or adult use. So I'm all about helping these families. We do a wish program. We do a gifting program to the cannabis prisoners to help them stay bonded with their families.
Yeah, well, that's so important, and it's hard to believe that cannabis is still federally a Schedule I drug. But take me back to the challenge that you faced legally when the conviction went down.
In 1986, I was a IndyCar driver. I was Rookie of the Year in 1986 at the Indianapolis 500. Had won a 1984 International Championship driving Grand Touring prototypes. And in 1987, instead of finding myself in a race car, I found myself in a courthouse battling a charge of importing and distributing a Scheduled I narcotic, marijuana. It was a case that had no marijuana because I imported it and it got sold and smoked. I took my case to trial and received a natural death sentence, life with no parole, and it took me 27 years to overcome it.
Well, that is hard to hear and harder to experience. How did you pull through, and how do you look back on those times?
I look back at the times that I often get asked the question, did I feel cheated for losing so much time? But no, I don't, because in every hardship and every struggle, there's positives that can come out of it. My last 9 years, I was a suicide volunteer companion. I sat with men for 4 hours a day for 9 years that tried to take their life. So the positivity that I'm talking about is uplifting others in their need of hardships and struggles. So that taught me about compassion and how to really be present in the moment and really be grateful for what we do have and whatever kind of struggle or hardship we find ourselves in. So we are blessed that we have the capacity and the capability to be the observer and the witness of our thoughts and emotions, and that way we can uplift others, and that's what we do at Freedom Grow. We support cannabis prisoners. Please check us out if you're a cannabis fan or not. Check us out because we're here to uplift the families that are struggling due to the stigma of this plant.
And in your booth here at the Harvest Ball, there are pictures of so many people incarcerated for years and years and years for offenses of, you know, possession or attempt to distribute or whatever, but years of incarceration for cannabis. Hard to comprehend in the 21st century that's where we're at.
Yeah, it's sad. I just had a friend that for 12 pounds of marijuana in New Mexico, He lost 31 years of his life in a penitentiary. And for 12 pounds, it's a flower, it's a plant. And it doesn't matter if you have thousands of pounds, are you a grower, are you a trapper, or whatever it is in this industry that you do, it's a plant. No one should be locked up for this plant. And we asked all to please support us and with freedomgrow.org, and we're making a difference in people's lives.
Do you feel like the public support for not only legalization, but reducing the stringent sentences on cannabis offenders is mounting and growing? And if so, what do you attribute that to?
It's definitely, the tide is changing. Change is coming. And it's contributed to education. People spreading the news, spreading the awareness that it's wrong. This plant is a plant that heals in a multitude of ways. It not only heals our bodies and our mind, but it also helps heal the planet. So education is like the key for us, and we educate. We go across the United States explaining to people at events that this is a plant that heals, and we also educate about jury nullification. You do not have to vote guilty. You can vote your conscience on a case if you feel that the time doesn't fit the crime.
Right. Now, you're here at a Harvest Ball Cannabis Festival, so you've got kindred souls. You've got preaching to the choir, if you will. How about your outreach to places and people who are less receptive or less aware of the cannabis plant? That's a greater challenge. And how do you do that?
So I do that in a few ways. I just recently did a four-day road and track magazine rally from upstate New York to Connecticut with fireside chats. And these are with people that are in the automotive industry. So we're spreading this awareness in all sectors that we can get to.
That's awesome. Your time incarcerated, was there an epiphany in prison that changed your mindset from perhaps to being bitter and depressed and then looking to inspire and help others with the compassion that you showed to help those who were suicidal behind bars?
It took me a lot of years to understand forgiveness. And that's part of the foundation, along with gratitude, that brings about abundance in all areas of our life. And so I spent 7 years out of 27 years in solitary confinement. And on one of them solitary confinements for 2 years, I was in solitary confinement. Through a lot of meditation and contemplation, I came to understand that I had to forgive everyone that was involved in my case, and that I moved forward and I had started trying to uplift others each day of my life. And that's kind of what my motto is. I'd like to go through every day trying to uplift someone else's life.
Well, that is about as beautiful a thing as I've ever heard. And that must have taken a lot of introspection, and I don't know how, a spiritual connection. You're without cannabis the whole time too, right? So
No.
Oh, well, please illuminate.
In the 27 years I spent in maximum security prisons, I smoked weed as often as I could. Sometimes I may go 30 days without smoking a joint or something, but it wasn't many days. Even in solitary confinement in maximum security prisons, I find myself with an ounce of weed within these confined areas. And it's amazing how this plant attracts like-minded people, and it is an amazing plant at the properties that it does in real.
So tell me a little bit more about that experience behind bars. Was it openly accepted, if you will, among prisoners, and the guards turned a blind eye, or do you have to be very surreptitious?
No, the majority of the guards have the unfortunate perception of the stigma that this plant has been for generations and for over 50 years, that a stigma has been falsely attached to this plant, and they have that conception or perception, and it's wrong. This plant is nothing like that. So you had to be really on the low with it, but of course all the prisoners pretty much accepted it, and the majority of the people in there smoke weed.
Yeah. Tell me more about the people that you've helped who were now still incarcerated, or the families that are dealing with the consequences of losing a loved one to these convictions and these very strident, austere punishments for freaking weed.
The whole range of families are currently going through struggles and hardships. I have a family right now, husband and wife, for 50 pounds of weed in the state of Florida. They received 5 years and 6 years. She was pregnant at the time they arrested her. Didn't give her bail. She had the baby at the county jail. They took the baby from the county jail, had to go through the court system to get the brother to raise the baby. Well, the husband just got out about 3 months ago, and she just got out 30 days ago. But after three years, 8 months, for 50 pounds of weed. Mm-hmm. Makes no sense.
Sure. What kind of political feedback, well, not political feedback, what kind of reaction have you gotten when you reach out to government officials, elected officials? Do you have a sympathetic ear in a particular corner or through anybody that you can name?
Yeah, it seems the new Parton attorney that Joe Biden has just appointed, I think she is sympathetic to the cannabis cause, and we're here gathering signatures that we send in to Joe Biden and the new Parton's attorney, asking to release the 188 nonviolent cannabis prisoners that we know about.
And how successful you think it? Well, I know a lot of cannabis convictions were just recently expunged by the presidential order, but there's still an uphill struggle.
Well, let me just straighten that out. There are no cannabis prisoners in federal system for possession of marijuana. That was a falsehood. That was like smoke and mirrors. And keeping it real, as I just said, there's not a single person in federal prison. He released no one when he made that statement that he was releasing prisoners for simple possession. Some of the states have simple possession cases, but not the federal government. The thousands of people that are currently incarcerated are people that are charged with possession and intent to distribute, or possession with intent to sell, grow. So it's a little weird statement, but no one got released on under Joe Biden for that statement he made several weeks ago.
Yeah, so it's not as powerful a move as it might appear on the surface.
Correct. It's more mirrors than anything. That some of the state, what it did do, though, is it brought it up for a conversation. So some of the states now are starting to release prisoners that are with possession charges. We have a couple of people that are in Louisiana that are doing 60 years for an ounce of weed. Now, that don't make no sense.
Sure.
So it's a long way to go and a lot of work to still do.
So when you go to the so-called red states, you go into the Deep South in Texas and Mississippi, Alabama, and the like, what kind of reception do you get, and how do you fight that uphill battle?
I was just a keynote speaker in the first ever Cannabis Expo in Biloxi, Mississippi. And I was honored that they asked me to be a keynote speaker. And I spoke about how blessed we are, and all around us is magnificent, and each one of us can uplift others. And then these states that have this draconian laws that people are in jail for an ounce of weed or 1 pound of weed, you give them 30 years for a kilo of weed. So the lawmakers need to be educated, and it's coming, change is coming, and we're currently doing all that we can to bring this awareness that no one should be locked up for a plant.
Well, that's awesome. I'm curious. You're the keynote speaker. How were you received? What kind of reception?
Oh, my reception was really good. After I had spoke, I had a lot of people ask questions in the audience. The mic was open for quite a while. The people asking questions and coming by the booth and signing out letters and asking Joe Biden to release the cannabis prisoners. So the reception was outstanding.
So are you optimistic, hopeful? How would you characterize your mindset in terms of helping those incarcerated and those facing criminal punishment for possession or intent to distribute cannabis?
I'm optimistic. I just sat in a court a couple of months ago. The guy was facing a 10-year mandatory minimum, and he got convicted, and the judge departed from the mandatory minimum. He gave the gentleman 7 years. Well, it was a good sign. 7 years is way too much for distribution of marijuana. But it change is coming, and the more that we speak about it to our neighbors, to the cashiers, or wherever we are, that, you know, there's people locked up for this plant, and it shouldn't be. So I'm optimistic, and I'm very hopeful that the federal government is going to bring in changes with safe banking and legalization, and I think we'll see major changes in the next 5 years.
Randy, you're doing an amazing job, and you are a healer and a helper, and you paid a dear price, but you didn't let it beat you down. It maybe inspired you.
Thank you. As we go on this journey, we have everything we need within us to create and manifest what we see within us. So if you just put together a vision of uplifting others, and how you can do that is living with good intentions from your heart, and that's what I try to do.
Randy Lanier, the freedomgrow.org leader and founder, international race car champion. Back in the day, we spent 27 years behind bars for a conspiracy to import and distribute marijuana, and now an advocate for those behind bars and those facing a punishment way too draconian. Thanks so much for your time, Randy. Best of luck to you.
Thank you, everybody, and come see us or go to visit our website, freedomgrow.org.
Awesome. Rich Walkoff on the W420 Radio Network.
The sun is the source of all our living things, but when winter comes or the clouds come or night comes, indoor farms turn to artificial light to make their crops grow. We're talking with Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy. He's the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. We're getting a lighting 101 from you, Joe. I'm learning so much. The business energy assessment that you provide to growers, no cost. Tell me more.
It's a great program through Xcel Energy. We have a team here in Colorado that collectively has over 20 years of experience in the cannabis industry, in the controlled environment ag industry. Xcel has hired Franklin Energy to really give growers free advice on how to save energy. So we are free consultants. So we go into grow facilities and take PPFD, light intensity measurements. We measure VPD for growers. We take all environmental measurements, and then we go ahead and provide growers with a report that has recommendations for not only energy savings, but also optimizing growers' environment so they can increase yield and whatnot. So, again, that's completely free. Xcel Energy pays the bill for growers' free consultants, and typically it takes a couple hours. We're in and we're out, and then, you know, we give you that really good report that is going to provide recommendations for how you can save money and help out your bottom line. We look at all cultivation equipment within the facility. So like you said, HVAC, dehumidification, airflow and fans. We'll look at your control systems, right? And then we'll make recommendations either how to tweak those systems to perform better now, or recommendations to potentially swap out that equipment for more efficient equipment. And on top of that, we will provide energy savings calculations for all those recommendations and estimated rebates for what you might receive by moving forward with those recommendations. On top of that, we're available to really help growers and hold their hands through the entire process of an upgrade.
If I have an indoor grow and I want to make a transition to LEDs and I want to get that Franklin Energy rebate, tell us what we've got to do.
You can contact the Xcel Indoor Ag Program at xcelenergy.com. That's xcelenergy.com. And then from there, you navigate up top to business customers and then select rebates from the dropdown. And finally, you can select business lighting from there. But to get information fast, my email address is jsullivan franklinenergy.com. Telephone number is 720-822-3719. One of our amazing cultivation energy advisors will help you get started along your journey to be more efficient.
And that's Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy, the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. He's a Jedi. Thanks so much, Joe. This is Rich Walkoff on America's Cannabis Conversation.
You're listening to America's Cannabis Conversation on W420RadioNetwork.com. It's time for Women in Cannabis on America's Cannabis Conversation, part of the W420 Radio Network.
Didn't you get the memo?
Here's Chase Roberts.
Welcome back to the conversation. This is Chase Roberts, Women in Cannabis correspondent for the W420 Radio Network. It is a pleasure to introduce the founder and owner of the Women in Cannabis Expo, Brooke Westlake. She was also named one of the most important women in weed 2020 by Green Market Report. Brooke, welcome. Thanks for being here. How are you?
I'm good, Chase. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for asking. You just held the first ever Women in Cannabis Expo in 2021. How was it?
It was far more than what we expected. We were supposed to have our first in 2020, which we moved to 2021. We had over 350 participants that came, 25 vendors, 36 speakers, and we did 15 awards at our expo, and it was a ginormous success, a hit. Everybody loved it. They're asking for dates for 2022. It was great.
You definitely found it. You found a niche that needed to be filled. What was your impetus to start the expo?
So I'm opening a cannabis testing lab in Nevada. And in 2019, at the very end of 2019, I went to MJ Biz to find out who my vendors were, who I needed to be a part with for the lab. And they had a woman's night, which I was great. I want to go network with women. What are they doing? How are they doing it? So we were in a room with just cocktails. I was waiting for a keynote speaker. I was waiting for like a bunch of things that didn't happen. Met a bunch of great women. And after I left there, we went on family vacation and I said, I will spend money. I'll go to some expos that are geared towards women in cannabis. And I couldn't find anything. So I went to the investors and said, I'm looking at not only the lab, but how would you feel about me hosting an annual Women in Cannabis Expo? Because I did expos for 10 years in medical sales. And they said, you have to do it. You have to, you have to, you have to. So they were fully supportive of me. They said, this is amazing. They couldn't believe that there wasn't anything being done yet. And they said, yeah, you're the woman to do it. Like, you'll get it done. So do it. Do both. So I did. I launched both companies at the same time.
Fantastic. You have a rich history in business development as an entrepreneur. It's really quite impressive. What were some of your other ventures, if you want to go into that a little bit?
I've had a few entities in my time. My other one that I had for a long time was my photography business. So BMW Photography, it's my initials, Brooke Morgan Westlake. I had that company for 10 years. I did a lot of weddings. I photographed tons of women for boudoir, which made sense because they felt more comfortable being in front of a woman photographer versus a male. In college, I was making magnets. I had these magnets by hand that I was making. I mean, there's a lot that I've done on the side, just in my own time. Artwork, art has been very near and dear to my heart. And then education as well. So not only with the entrepreneur spirit business part, but also with education, the education component, and then the 20 years of healthcare. The last 10 years I spent helping a company. It was a privately held independent company. And we were doing a product launch for telehealth with a kiosk, medical kiosk. And we literally traveled tons of medical trade shows that we went to launch, introduce. I was the front face of the videos that we did for the instructional videos. We did so much. I was the front face for social media. So there was a lot of things that we didn't have as a company. And that company had actually been around for a long time, but they were branching off into new uncharted waters with the telehealth and the kiosk and telehealth. And there was things that just hadn't been onboarded until I came on board. And I said, what about this? And what about social networking? And what about videos? And what about these other aspects of the company that hadn't been done? And the owner was like, okay, that's all you. Go ahead. It's yours. So get it done.
The innovator.
the innovator that you are. And I, you know, I want our listeners to know you also have some other current things you're launching. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that, your other ventures?
I can, because we did make some announcements. So the other companies that we're launching right now, one of which is going to be the Garden Ganja Goddesses calendar for 2022. We photographed it the day after our event, which was fabulous. It was a lot. The women, I just went over the photos. They're breathtaking. Part of that will entail that we are also launching an apparel website. So cute clothing with cannabis on it, jewelry, photography, art. We're embracing all of it. But we're also then contracting with Organic Hemp Farm here in Nevada to have our own product line that will obviously be a white labeled product line, but be with us. And so we haven't decided if we're going to name it the Ganja Goddess product line. We're still kind of working on that, but that's going to feed into our apparel website, as well as the calendar will be on our main Women in Cannabis Expo website, and will also be on the apparel website and then on social media. So these women are the women that are in the leadership roles. They're speakers, they have companies, and we're embracing all of that by showcasing them in this calendar that we are releasing hopefully in like 2 to 3 weeks.
You're very strategic in that everything you're doing is somehow all interrelated and could work well together. At the expo, did you have global participants?
It was, we did. So we had people that flew in from Canada. We actually had one person was coming in from France, and unfortunately with COVID travel restrictions, they weren't able to make it, but we had people from all over the United States. So a lot of people thought that we were going to have a lot of Nevada influx because we were hosting it here in Reno, Nevada, and that wasn't the case at all. My ticket sales were from New Mexico, Florida, New York, California, Washington, Oregon, everywhere, Canada. So it was really amazing, because that's really what we also wanted to encompass too, is embracing everybody, not just the United States. Canada is, you know, their cannabis loving, friendly country. And so we weren't surprised that we had people coming in from Canada for that. We weren't surprised that people in New York are just starting businesses because it's fairly new to them that they have been passing the bills for rec and medical. So we were not surprised by it at all. And we just want to continue to grow and help encompass everybody. And so that's why for 2022, we're looking at two shows, East Coast and then a West Coast. And then that way people who maybe they don't want to travel as far to the West Coast, but maybe they're coming from France and Italy or other countries, they can make an easier transition to come and participate on the East Coast. And then we will have our West Coast show as well in the fall of 2022.
What a great idea.
Thank you.
Yeah, definitely needed. You know, this segment itself, Women in Cannabis, part of the reason this was started is, you know, those voices weren't really always being heard. I think over time now they are. But do you have any advice for women getting into the cannabis business? Because I think we all know the stat of, you know, CEOs for these companies, you know, only 8% are women. So do you have any advice you would like to offer our woman listeners?
I have tons of advice. If you're stuck and you don't know where to start, where to go, what to do, give us a call. We can talk to you over the phone. We can connect you with people who might be a good fit. We'll ask you some questions. What are you passionate about? What have you done in your past career? What do you think you're looking to do? And I've had some of those conversations, especially with a lot of the attendees who were there kind of trying to network and figure out where they wanted to go or what kind of company they wanted. They can always pick up the phone and call us. They can email us. And if we have somebody we can connect you with, we will absolutely connect you with. The other thing is, don't be afraid to just do it. Just start. Just go. So I would encourage any woman who wants to go into this business, just start moving. Start doing research. Start looking for what you want to do. Start writing things down, ideas, names of businesses down. And that's really the first step. Don't be afraid to embrace this. If this is something you're looking to go into, we really need to shift these numbers of this 8% of women in leadership in this industry. We should be at 50%, 55%. This is a female plant. And so I want to encourage all women, if you don't know where to start, call us up, email us. If you got some ideas, and you're looking for some connections, call us, email us. We can look down and see who we have that might be a good fit for you. But don't not start. Get going. Put one foot in front of the other and just do it. That's what I say to everybody. Just go. Just do it.
Such a valuable resource and good advice. Now, you guys gave out awards at the expo. I want to give proper, due and, props to the people that won. Do you want to tell us who won what?
Yes. So we actually have 15 awards total, one of which has not been given out yet, because that will be on our survey for best speaker. So that will be voted on and that will be received later on. But we did give out 14 awards. The first 5 awards that we did were for the online nominations that we received from August 1st to September 1st. We then opened up the online voting from September 3rd to September 20th. We received 7,525 votes in that short time frame. It was crazy to watch these numbers coming in. The first award went to Entrepreneur of the Year. These are all, now, mind you, these are all woman nomination companies or woman owned companies. So the first one was for Entrepreneur of the Year, which went to High Society Mama Bianca Snyder. Next, we had Woman Owned Company of the Year, which went to Dank Girls Chelsea Green. Next, we had Woman Podcast of the Year, The Canna Mom Show by Joyce Gerber. Next, we had the Woman Book of the Year, which went to Weed Mom by Danielle Simone Brand. And last, in this online voting category, we had Woman Trailblazing Startup of the Year, which went to the Cannabis Wedding Expo, Vanessa Oliver. So those were all the online votes that we had no control over. These numbers were shifting daily. It was amazing to watch. The winners received a exclusive, we're hoping, it's a fire crystal. So it's a flame, a frosted crystal, big plaque. It's a big award. It's awesome. Next, we did some separate in-house awards that we discussed as a panel with me and my team. The first one was Most Resilient, and this went to Safe Harbor Banking, Amanda McCombs. Next, we went to Networking Woman, and this went to Hip Lives by Amy Raymond. Next, we had Sparking Inspiration by Crop Top Greenhouse AC Moon.
Oh, great.
Next, we had Woman on the Rise. This went to Canna Moms Are Good Moms Too, which is a nonprofit by Amanda Rogers. Next, we had the Brooke and Jelena Business Award, which Jelena also referred to on stage as the BJ Award, which gave everybody a great
giggle.
Laugh.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. This went to Tokativity, Samantha, and Lisa. And last, we had the Spotlight Award, which we went to All Access Las Vegas for Sheldon Cooper. Then we had some plaques that we gave away. The first plaque that we gave away was the Fired Up Most Supportive, which went to the Canna Real Estate Group, Bill and Anastasia. Next up, we had the Lit Award for the Best Branded Booth. This went to Wildfire Concentrates and Care Division, sister-owned company, Madison and Montana. Next up, we had Fired Up the Creative Booth. This went to Acute on Chronic by Rebecca Abrams. She's an RN. And then lastly, like I said, we have the best speaker, which we have not announced yet because we have to send that out in a survey to see who that goes to.
Brooke, thank you for being here. It's been such a pleasure. If you missed any of this great interview with Brooke Westlake, you can go to W420RadioNetwork.com and click on the archive section to listen to this and other great interviews. To find a list of all the Women in Cannabis Expo winners, you can go to WomenInCannabisExpo.com, and you can also find out about future events.
When winter comes or the clouds more night comes, indoor farms turn to artificial light to make their crops grow. Let's say hello to an expert, Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy. He is the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. Everybody knows that indoor grow is more challenging, and then again, it can be more advantageous because you can control the ecosystem and your environment.
A word for indoor ag or indoor growing would also be controlled environment agriculture. And, that's exactly what you're trying to do. You're trying to control and provide the best possible environment. Far and away, LED is the best source to provide light for plants to grow. They're more energy efficient, they use less wattage, and they provide the same amount, if not better light, than high-pressure sodium, metal halide, and other traditional light sources. They're more of a broad-spectrum light source, so they're providing light within the photosynthetic active radiation wavelengths really more broadly than your traditional light sources. They last longer, and they're traditionally more reliable than high-pressure sodium, metal halide, and those types of light sources.
I understand it can reduce grow time up to 30%. They can last up to 50,000 hours. They are more durable than fluorescents, and they emit less heat. It's like a no-brainer. And I understand that Franklin Energy is giving consumers an opportunity to capitalize on LEDs if they want to upgrade their lighting system. So tell us what's going on.
Franklin Energy runs and implements rebate programs for utilities all across the country.
If I have an indoor grow and I want to make a transition to LEDs and I want to get that Franklin Energy rebate, tell us what we've got to do.
You can contact the Xcel Indoor Ag Program at xcelenergy.com. That's xcelenergy.com. And then from there, you navigate up top to business customers and then select rebates from the dropdown. And finally, you can select business lighting from there. My email address is jsullivan@franklinenergy.com. Telephone number is 720-822-3719. One of our amazing cultivation energy advisors will help you get started along your journey to be more efficient.
Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy, the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. Thanks so much, Joe. This is Rich Walkoff on America's Cannabis Conversation.
Well, thankfully, California is reopening. The world is reopening. The pandemic is subsiding in most of the USA, and travel is going to ramp up. And I guess when you think about California travel, it's from the beaches to the mountains, wine tasting, maybe you're whale watching or the like. But what about the cannabis industry? We are here today with Brian Applegarth, the founder of the International Cannabis Travel Association. And Brian, kind of counterintuitively, the cannabis travel world has been blowing up during the pandemic and maybe will continue to ascend even in the aftermath.
Yeah. I think the future is bright. It's an exciting new travel segment. And, I started in the space around 2015, and here we are in 2021. And it's going to be a very interesting year ahead for a whole bunch of reasons. You know, just the maturity of the concept of cannabis travel tourism and how that's going to integrate into really the travel industry at large, everything from airports to rental car companies to hotels to comprehensive strategy for tourist destinations. How are we going to position this? Not to mention cannabis and hemp and CBD are inherently a tool for wellness and well-being, which is, as a standalone category of wellness, is the data shows that's going to be a segment that continues to grow, which cannabis and hemp are right kind of in the core of that.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about the bud and breakfast is the old, the old view of cannabis friendly hotel destinations, but it's transcended that. We've gone beyond that, haven't we?
Yeah. And I mean, cannabis and hemp is really inclusive, right? So you have everything from people that are looking to the kind of the can of curious that are looking to understand it more and how it can improve their quality of life, maybe even get them off some pharmaceuticals. There's a lot of kind of press around how they could potentially support in that way. And then you have people that maybe used back in or consume cannabis more regularly back in college that are kind of re-entering it now, and they don't necessarily want to smoke anymore because they have kids, but the beverages and the edibles are really speaking to them. You have, chefs and cuisine really coming into play, which is a huge part of the travel kind of ecosystem, our restaurants. Yet again, there's just like so many ways. With bud and breakfast specifically, you've seen an evolution of kind of first mover and people who are adopting and raising their hands saying cannabis friendly here. And now we're kind of hitting a point where you see different types of models when it comes to cannabis integration in hotels and bed and breakfasts. Some are very cannabis forward, where they're catering specifically to the culture and the cannabis consumer. That is more of the connoisseur level, people that really appreciate kind of the cannabis lifestyle. And then you have other ones that are offering as light a lift as kind of a CBD massage in their spa. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the cannabis attraction for their property. One thing that thankfully more and more hotels and resorts are starting to do today is at least adopt kind of basic strategy and operations for their hotel, training their staff, having collateral concierge to educate visitors when they ask about it, just being more prepared for this mm-hmm. travel segment that research has kind of identified.
Yeah, how about the demographics? Are you finding that for California, cannabis-friendly hotels and boutique places, like we're here at Mine and Farm, a beautiful bed and breakfast in Guerneville, kind of the gateway to the Emerald Triangle. What kind of people predominantly are more likely to attend or visit places like this?
Yeah, well, like Mine and Farm, where we're sitting now, is a beautiful, I think it's 9 to 13 room bed and breakfast that's tucked in the Russian River, right? So it's already a tourist destination. It has been for decades. And what Mine and Farm have done is really integrated cannabis and hemp into their kind of offering to their guests, right? Where it's a very normalized experience. There's ashtrays available, and outside there's these beautifully stunning views where you can enjoy a pre-roll or drink a cannabis beverage in kind of nature, because private property, right? So they're really kind of adopting this and reaching this audience. The audience that we're seeing from this, as far as the Mine and Farm location, it's people from out of state, but also people coming up from the Bay Area, especially in the wake of COVID, you know, people looking to get out of the urban centers, get up in nature where there's a bit more space. And nature is actually one of those kind of self-descriptors or self-identifiers that the cannabis motivated travel audience stated was, you know, they really love they love nature experiences with cannabis. They also self-identify as wine enthusiasts and foodies. So yeah, I mean, it's going to be exciting to watch, and places like Mine and Farm are going to continue to evolve.
Mm-hmm. Now, talk about the amalgamation, the food, the wine, the weed. Mm-hmm. In a lot of ways, they are all simpatico, but the law doesn't always allow for the consumption of cannabis with alcohol on the same premises. And explain a little bit about those distinctions.
Yeah. So when you get into cannabis retail, licensed cannabis retail and licensed cannabis consumption for the public, you know, that's obviously part of the cannabis supply chain. And there's regulation and licensing around all that. If you are over 21, you're able to purchase and possess as well as gift cannabis to other adults that are 21 and up. When it comes down to kind of the trifecta you were talking about of food, wine and cannabis, a lot of it's in the orchestration. Now, if you're having a private kind of gathering with friends, then that's something that if it's in the personal privacy of your own home, you know, cannabis is legal to purchase and bring to your own home. And there's also cannabis infused olive oil. So if you decide to kind of use cannabis in cuisine or cook a dish, then you're it's more than compliant to be able to do that. Now, when you're doing it publicly or people are purchasing a ticket, and you're promoting that consumption as part of that experience, that's where it gets on shaky ground and it's not compliant. And again, this will evolve. I think in the alcohol industry, we have, I don't know, I want to say upwards of 100 plus different types of licenses. Cannabis is, I think, at 20 something at this point. So there's a lot more that are going to be coming. I know Desert Hot Springs and John Thatcher out there with Bubbling Wells is looking at events as well and really innovating and continuing to push Desert Hot Springs forward as he has. Right now in motion out there in the desert and Desert Hot Springs, there's a program spinning up that's all about kind of a guest day pass and being able to legally vend to hotels of boutique hotels in that area. And that's also a market that's really been on the forefront of lounges and shared consumption experiences mm-hmm. as well.
Now you say, as the founder of the International Cannabis Travel Association, what about the worldview?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So with that kind of global lens on, you know, you see destinations like Barcelona kind of really innovating the space in this quasi-legal private club atmosphere. I think there's well over 100 now or more in Barcelona, which are these cannabis clubs. there's a couple guys that I know over there that have one of these. And, you know, it's interesting. Did you ever go to Utah when you had to get a membership to go in a bar to have a beer?
No, I haven't, but I know how restrictive it is.
Right, right. So I think of it as like, oh, it's like the Utah model for alcohol, where you go and you buy a private membership to a club with annual dues, and then you have access to this club, right? So there's these different models that people are adopting from kind of the different alcohol landscapes. And Barcelona is really leading as far as kind of Europe. Of course, Amsterdam is still there. There's a little bit of a shakeup or some negotiation going on about how cannabis is going to exist going forward. But this has happened multiple times with Amsterdam. And I believe when they start looking at the revenue and economic impact and the visitor economy, they realize that cannabis is incredibly important for Amsterdam. I believe the statistics, if I recall correctly, it was 1 in 10 visitors to Amsterdam visit a cannabis coffee shop, or no, excuse me, 1 in 4 visit a coffee shop while they're on vacation. And 1 out of 10 will actually directly cite that is the reason why they came to the destination, which as travel looks at rebound, you know, that's important to take into consideration.
Sure. I would think Portugal would be there too, having legalized most recreational drugs and the like. So cannabis would be front and center.
Yeah, no, Portugal's right in that forefront. You know, there's innovation happening there. Of course, Amsterdam, Barcelona. I mean, I just a couple years ago went to an event in Prague where it was like a meeting of all these different kind of cannabis leaders across Europe. And, you know, the hemp industry is taking off out there a bit quicker than it is here, even arguably, which I consider that cannabis related travel as well. You know, so that's everything from the way hemp is folding in is really in a way of sustainability, as well as, again, health and wellness and well-being and mm-hmm. CBD massage and CBD beverages derived from hemp and beyond.
Yeah. How about other states in the U.S.? We had 16 or 17 that mm-hmm. recreational cannabis use is now legal. What about the hotel and travel industry related to their involvement with cannabis?
Yeah, great question. You know, I've caught wind of a couple new cannabis tourism and travel dedicated organizations that have surfaced in the last couple months, which is awesome, because the more people talking about this and shining a spotlight on this conversation and the convergence of these two industries, the cannabis industry and the travel industry, the more it's going to normalize. It's going to normalize quicker, right? So as far as states having a dedicated travel organization, you know, the Cannabis Travel Association that I was part of starting, we've kind of been the only organization really dedicated to travel. There's a lot of cannabis industry associations, cannabis chamber of commerces, which are really focused on supply chain. The two places we really overlap with organizations that are cannabis industry organizations is with consumption and retail. So kind of like, how can a visitor access this? Mm-hmm. And what is the experience? Is it safe? What are some enabling legislative moves that would really help empower the adoption into travel destinations? So, I mean, it's jurisdiction by jurisdiction. You know, we're hoping with the Cannabis Travel Association, our goal in 2022 is to be rolling out a chapter program, where we're going to be piloting one in California this year as kind of the West Coast chapter of the United States. And then we're looking at other markets like Vegas, absolutely, Florida, New York, Portland, Seattle, places where we have leaders out there that are part of our association already as members and really dedicated members that can lead kind of a chapter rollout. And then we can support them in our three pillars, which our three pillars are advocacy, education, and networking. And the Cannabis Travel Association is a 501c6 member-based organization, and you can find out more information at cannabistravelassociation.org.
Right, and that means you're a nonprofit.
We're a nonprofit, yeah. We're a nonprofit in our fourth year.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Now, what about party buses? I was reading about Cannavines, the wine and weed tours, Oaktown Essential Cannabis Tours, LA Essential Cannabis Tours, mm-hmm. the Cannabis Trail, where you can come up to, Northern California, historic and cultural sites mm-hmm. where maybe you go back to the Humboldt High Five legacy growers.
Oh, yeah.
So you really take a deep dive into the history of it.
Yeah. So there's two things you kind of brought up there. One is cannabis tour operators, which are people that are guides that have a vehicle that take groups or private groups and they take them on a cannabis experience of some sort. And those really vary, everything from farm visits to more educational leaning, to retirement communities, to investors that want, you know, a 3-day experience and they want to understand the industry and know how to deploy their dollars back where they live, right? So it's super interesting right now what kind of traffic these tour operators are getting, and each of them have kind of their own model. Now, when it comes down to the Cannabis Trail, that's something that I'm deeply familiar with because that's one of my projects. So the Cannabis Trail is a 501c3, also a nonprofit. And I've been working on that about 5 years. And that is a piece of cannabis, really tourism infrastructure for Northern California. It's a 9-county project. It goes from Santa Cruz up to the Emerald Triangle. And if you travel the trail when you visit Northern California, you'll come across cultural cannabis landmarks as well as cannabis monuments, right? So the landmarks really kind of signify, you know, what was special about this place. Why is this part of the cannabis legalization movement, which is a Northern California story? The monuments are really to honor the major principles that came out of it and just kind of keep those stories alive, right? Mm-hmm. So people remember that cannabis is medicine and cannabis really promotes your balance and wellness in your body. Mm-hmm. And that was that really that kind of epidemic is what set medical legalization in motion for California. Now with the cultural landmarks, we're installing our first handful of landmarks this year, and this is years in the making. So this is super exciting. And this is really one of my pet projects. I love the Cannabis Trail. So the first two cultural landmarks that are going in next month, about a month from today. And they're going in Southern Humboldt. One of those is at Huckleberry Hill Farms, which is Johnny Casale. He's one of the Humboldt High Five, and really an amazing legacy cultivator who was kind of a casualty of the war on drugs, which is why that cultural landmark exists there, is to teach about the small Humboldt legacy farmer and specifically Johnny's story. You know, he was in federal prison for 8 years.
And I interviewed him. I know the tale.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, yeah. The positive messaging, kind of reversing the old paradigm and the old mis and disinformation campaign that was all too prevalent.
Right.
What would you suggest to bed and breakfast owners, small hotel, boutique hotel owners, in terms of becoming more cannabis friendly? What are some of the guideposts and suggestions that you would offer?
Yeah, well, I think so. One is just having it be prepared, right? So be able to confidently respond to visitors. And this is, I believe if you're any hospitality facing business, specifically hotels, but really anybody that serves the visitor economy, that you should be able to communicate the very basic state laws of what is legal and isn't legal and be able to direct visitors in a very friendly way and invite them to participate in the cannabis operators of your destination that do a great job for hospitality. So basically just be prepared to be able to respond to your visitors' requests and your guests' requests. You know, I would encourage even additional collateral or some kind of content piece where you can really teach people about the history of cannabis a little bit. You know, we live in a very unique window right now where cannabis has been illegal in the world, specifically United States, but globally for less than 100 years. And if you actually look at, you know, even the foundational building blocks of the United States and even kind of like the cradle of civilization, you know, cannabis has been there, and we have co-evolved with this plant. And there's so many different cultures around the world that have adapted and used this plant in a really unique, unique way. That shows how it can really balance mind, body, and spirit. It's a tool for wellness. And as travelers and visitors come and they're open to new experiences and they're outside of their comfort zone and they want to do something that they wouldn't do at home, a cannabis experience, there's many forms of that. That could be a dispensary 101 experience where you're simply going there because you know that that dispensary is built for hospitality and they have partnered with hotels and they're ready to accept guests that just want to learn. Mm-hmm. And they might walk away with buying a CBD topical for the first time. Right. And they might use it that night and it might bring a smile to their face because it's the first time they've done it, right? Sure. So there's those kind of visitors. So get prepared, look for partners, you know, have collateral. And I'd say even having a little bit of education or a coffee book that shows, you know, why cannabis is legal again and why it is medicine and putting it in the context for me. I really enjoy looking at timelines and understanding, you know, how short, how small this window is where cannabis has been.
Yeah. Super catching up with you. Brian Applegarth, the founder of the International Cannabis Travel Association, here on the W420 Radio Network. If you want to hear it again, it's the W420RadioNetwork.com/archive. I'm Rich Walkoff. Thanks for listening, and we'll be right back.
Well, we all love that big yellow ball in the sky. The sun is the source of all our living things. But when winter comes, or the clouds come, or night comes, indoor farms turn to artificial light to make their crops grow. And what lighting works best? How do we maximize crop growth? Well, let's say hello to an expert, Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy. He is the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager, talking about the advantages and the rebate opportunity for those who have a system that may be a little outdated or not as technologically advanced. So speak a little bit more about that, if you would.
On behalf of Xcel Energy, we, Franklin Energy, implements their Indoor Ag Business Energy Assessment Program that has access to Xcel Energy's full suite of energy-efficient rebates that are available to growers and other commercial customers. So at the moment, Xcel Energy is providing 70 cents per watt installed as a rebate. So for the purchase of horticultural LEDs, Xcel Energy will actually pay their growers to install them. Fantastic. You know, as I said, Franklin Energy does work all over the country for a number of utilities, and there is, at least to my knowledge, no other utility that has as a track rebate for their growers. So right now, if you were to buy, let's just say, a 700-watt LED, you would receive almost $500, so $490 for the purchase of those lights, at least per light, that is. So it's a tremendous financial advantage to buy down the cost of horticultural LEDs, because, you know, we all know that they can be expensive. So it really brings down growers' ROIs to enable them to try out the technology and implement it permanently.
That's awesome. I mean, if you can increase yield, optimize your light spectrum so you save money on the energy, you emit less heat, so that reduces cooling energy costs. You control the UV amount, so reducing the stress in the plants, fewer pests, less fungus and the like. I mean, this is the no-brainer of all time. I mean, I'm learning so much, and I'm sure our listeners are too. So if I have an indoor grow and I want to make a transition to LEDs and I want to get that Franklin Energy rebate, tell us what we've got to do.
Our rebates are actually paid for. They're paid to growers through Xcel Energy. And you can go to xcelenergy.com. That's xcelenergy.com to the lighting efficiency section to take a look at the application there. What we do is really help growers from the start to the end. We'll help you identify where that application's at. We'll help you fill it out. Maybe help you select some lights and whatever you want your layout to be. You can contact the Xcel Indoor Ag Program at xcelenergy.com. That's xcelenergy.com. And then from there, you navigate up top to business customers and then select rebates from the dropdown. And finally, you can select business lighting from there. But the better way to get information fast and to participate in any of our programs would be just contact me directly, either by email or phone. My email address is jsullivan@franklinenergy.com. My telephone number is 720-822-3719. One of our amazing cultivation energy advisors will help you get started along your journey to be more efficient.
That's awesome, and we will link that on our site as well, W420 Radio Network. Joe Sullivan, how illuminating this conversation has been. You've shed the light, put a bright light on a dark corner of my mind about indoor grows and LED benefits and the rebates and the like.
And that's Joe Sullivan from Franklin Energy, the Indoor Agricultural Program Manager. He's a Jedi. Thanks so much, Joe. This is Rich Walkoff on America's Cannabis Conversation.
W420RadioNetwork.com